Hello, I'm Chris LeBlanc. This is number 0344, the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, and it comes to you right now.
The following program is brought to you in living color.
Now, it's time for an eclectic mix of interviews and some of the oddest news stories you'll ever hear. It's the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder.
Hey there, hi there, ho there! Peter Anthony Holder here with you, and yes, this is indeed another edition of the Stuff File program, number 0344. And coming up on this edition of the Stuff File program, Andrew Vazekas, the Night Sky Guy, is back, this time to talk about his own work. He's the author of Star Trek, the official guide to our universe.
What we're talking about here is a book that merges the fictional Star Trek universe with the real universe that we live in. And surprisingly enough, there is a lot of similarities, a lot of things that are found within Star Trek, the voyages, the objects that they encounter, the astronomical destinations. Many of them have real-life counterparts.
Montreal-based actor Spiro Malandrakis shares a bit of his busy career. He's had roles in many hit series, including Quantico, Real Detective, and 19-2.
I must mention they just won the Screen Actors Awards for Best Drama of the Year and Best Casting. So you got a shout out to 19-2 for their great work. But that show is just literally, I've been working my whole life to play a character like the character I'm playing in 19-2.
LA talent agent Erin Morgart shares what her job entails and how it differs from that of a talent manager.
Managers can't go into Mark Burnett Studios and present or pitch a show and be able to do the contracts and all of that. A talent agent can do that. They are legally able to do that, of course. There's a drastic difference. There are a lot of laws that are lax throughout the United States that entails anyone essentially to be a manager. Not to put some down, because there are some excellent managers out there. But for me, I wanted to go the extra mile and become an actual agent.
And there's lots and lots and lots of stuff, and of course, an idiot of the day. The guest later. The person who told you this was show number 0344 was Chris LeBlanc, the afternoon drive producer for Tasso and Friends at Joule 106.7 FM. That's in Hudson, Quebec. Thank you very much, Chris, for doing the guest slate on this edition of the Stuff File program, a program that's also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. Well, let's get right to the stuff, shall we? A woman in North Carolina was arrested on a charge of larceny after allegedly stealing an ambulance because she wanted a free ride. Charlotte Mecklenburg police arrested 36-year-old Autumn Prezel after being accused of driving off with an ambulance belonging to the Carolinas Medical Center. Investigators said the woman was not high or mentally unstable or ill. She said that all she wanted was a free ride. When people noticed the woman stealing the ambulance, they notified the police. All ambulances are equipped with GPS trackers, so the police knew immediately where the ambulance was located. Well, you know, she wanted a free ride, so I'm sure she'll get one now, just not to the destination of her choosing. And when Cook County, Illinois Sheriff Tom Dart took the job, he didn't expect what jail inmates were eating to be a major problem. Then he found out that they were eating the jail. Lorin Barber's son is one such inmate. She says he's gone for surgery 19 to 20 times for eating screws, nails, and more. Pieces of whatever falls off the benches, paint, he don't care, she said. The doctor was like, he's going to make it if he just stops eating expletive. There you go. I figured the expletive she used. Dart thinks the inmates eat the inedible to manipulate the system. They're attempting to get out of this place. Their surgeries are often performed in outside hospitals, which, including sending guards along, is a very expensive proposition, Dart says. Barber claims her son needs psychological treatment. You figure? Or maybe just a healthier way to get enough iron, in his diet. Meanwhile, for this next story, let me paint a picture for you. It's a license plate. The plate had the name and official nickname of New York State. It was the familiar orange and blue, and the blue silhouette of the state appeared in the middle of the number, which was FYG3925. So, why did Erik County Sheriff's deputy stop the car? Well, it might have had something to do with the fact that the plate was made of cardboard, painted by hand to imitate an actual New York license plate. 28-year-old Amanda Schweikert was charged, among other things, with possessing a forged instrument. In case you are wondering, tweeted the sheriff's office, homemade cardboard license plates are not legal. Yes, thank you, Captain Obvious. Schweikert was held for want of bail money. And in case you're wondering, tweeted the court clerk, homemade paper bail money is not legal. Okay, British supermarket chain Tesco has announced it stopped selling crescent-shaped croissants in favor of a non-curvy variety of the pastry, claiming shoppers just can't figure out how to get jam on the curved ones. It's the spreadability factor, claims Tesco's chief croissant buyer, Harry Jones. And now I'm beginning to wonder, if they have a chief croissant buyer, do they have, like, assistant croissant buyers along the way, too? Like, how many croissant buyers are at Tesco? But I digress. Harry goes on to say that the majority of shoppers find it easier to spread jam or their preferred filling on a straighter shape. Curved croissants, he says, are more fiddly, and most Brits can take up to 3 attempts to achieve perfect coverage, which increases the potential for accidents involving sticky fingers and tables. British newspapers are ridiculing the store's claims. The London Guardian called it utter nontroversy and ran a 5,800-word feature on how to eat the breakfast bread. And the London Telegraph polled readers to find 81% preferred curved croissants. So, apparently only Tesco thinks Brits are too stupid to be able to spread jam without their help. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, the cybersecurity unit of the Bed Bath & Beyond store chain, and I bet you didn't know they had a cybersecurity unit at Bed Bath & Beyond, did you? Yeah. Anyway, they were suspicious of brand new merchandise appearing on eBay. They bought one item, traced the serial number to their store in Lady Lake, Florida, and realized the eBay seller was the husband of the store's manager. Manager Jamie Deske allegedly admitted she took some items out of the store in her purse and put larger merchandise in a trash bag and left it behind the store for her husband Stephen Deske to pick up and sell on eBay. Police say the couple stole and sold 31 items worth more than $11,000. Deske was fired, and she and her husband were arrested on grand theft charges. Well, now we know what the beyond part means. I mean, that's Bed Bath and way beyond, isn't it? Anyway, let's get to our first guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? We've had Andrew Vazekas, the night sky guy, on the program dozens of times over the years. He wears many hats. He's a science writer, he works for National Geographic, and he's a member of the Royal Astronomical Society of Canada. Well, he now has a new hat to wear. Author. He has a book coming out entitled Star Trek, The Official Guide to Our Universe, which is sure to enthrall stargazers and trekkers alike. Andrew joins us via Skype from right here in Montreal. Hi, Andrew.
Hey, Peter.
How you doing, sir?
Just doing great, thank you.
Excellent. Right off the bat, I have to apologize for dragging you onto this program on several occasions when I know you were busy working and researching your book. So I apologize for that in advance.
It's always a pleasure, though, always.
But now that the fruits of your labor are about to come out, tell us about this fascinating book, which is done in conjunction with National Geographic and CBS.
That's right. I'm super excited that finally, after so many years of really just dreaming and then hard work, finally I have this amazing book come out. It's called Star Trek, The Official Guide to Our Universe. And basically, what we're talking about here is a book that merges the fictional Star Trek universe with the real universe that we live in and we're surrounded with. And surprisingly enough, there is a lot of similarities, a lot of things that are found within Star Trek, the voyages, the objects that they encounter, the astronomical destinations that just abound throughout all the Star Trek television series and movies. Many of them have real life counterparts. So what this book really is a tour guide to through many of the voyages of Star Trek, and it points out some of the science behind the astronomical destinations, be they planets, gas clouds, star clusters, things like that. Then we point out the real science in them, what we know about them, and I guide folks to actually stepping outside and looking up at the heavens and finding it for themselves, actually going on their own journey in their backyards.
So was it a surprise to you when you first started researching this idea for the book that in the Star Trek world there was a lot of fact hidden in their fiction?
Yeah, you know what? It is amazing because, you know, I grew up watching Star Trek since a very young age. I mean, I grew up seeing it in the first one of the first reruns time periods in the early 70s, and with my dad. And my dad is a scientist and a medical doctor, and he was always interested in Star Trek, and he introduced me to a lot of the episodes at a young age, and we also did astronomy together. And so I don't know if it was a complete surprise. It's sort of like when I watched those, I remember watching a lot of those episodes, I saw things that we were encountering through our telescope on the rooftop of the building we lived. So there was this immediate connection that I had with Star Trek and could connect it to my other love, which was astronomy. That's followed me throughout my life as a hobby. And so seeing all that stuff, you know, but then seeing many of the later series, and there was a lot of science there that they were doing, and a lot of the astronomy there was bang on. As I became more informed about astronomy as a hobby and understanding the real universe, I could appreciate more of the Star Trek because they really were bang on with a lot of the science there.
Now, are you talking actual geographic locations or the concepts of them?
Both. You know, both. The scientific concepts of things were there. Like, for instance, I'll give you an example, a very famous one that even the casual Star Trek fan probably can remember, is that fantastic favorite movie, Star Trek II, The Wrath of Khan, and that epic battle scene with the villain Khan, of course, and Kirk on Enterprise, and Khan on the Reliant starship, and they're battling within a gas cloud we call a nebula, and this nebula is what is known in Star Trek as the Mutara Nebula, right? So that's the fictional name of this nebula. But if you look at the battle scenes and you see the background that this major battle's playing out on, you can see that it looks like something. If you're a stargazer, it's something that you would be very familiar with. It's actually a favorite target of many backyard stargazers. It's called the Orion Nebula. There's a direct correlation between this fictional nebula and the real life nebula. And while there is no Mutara Nebula in the real world, you can definitely see the structure in the film of what a nebula is like. This is called an emission nebula in particular. It's where stars are born, and these young stars that are embedded at the center of this gas cloud emit a lot of radiation, which cause the gas surrounding it to glow in a myriad of colors, pinks and purples and blues. And that all is played out in those epic battle scenes in The Wrath of Khan. And in real life, the Orion Nebula, again, is a star factory. It's actually a stellar nursery where there are hundreds of baby stars nestled in the center of this giant gas cloud in space. And in fact, you can go outside. Most people around the world can actually see it with their naked eye, even from light-polluted suburbs, if they know where to look. You can find this counterpart to the Mutara Nebula in the night sky. And I think that this is a typical example of how Star Trek really emulates the real world in many ways, the real universe. And in fact, it's not by accident. The Star Trek always had scientists on board their episodes and writing out the scripts and making sure that when they involve astronomical objects in their scripts, that they really flesh it out with as much science as possible. So my hats are off. Having done this book, I can tell you my hats are off to Star Trek and the folks behind all of that wonderful work, because they really took to heart science and painting a real life-like universe.
Now, your book is coming out and it coincides with the 50th anniversary of Star Trek. And I've known people in the past who have gotten in contact with the folks at Paramount and CBS in the hopes of doing something in connection with Star Trek, and it's a pretty tough road to go. Now, you're working with National Geographic, but you had to also cross that Rubicon, as it were. How was it getting the folks from Star Trek on board with your book?
Well, in fact, it was a real pleasure, I have to tell you. I had some intrepidation because I've heard so much over the years. I mean, when I first dreamt up this book over a decade ago, I think the situation was a little different. And, you know, the folks at CBS, they really take to heart this whole franchise, and they're very protective of it. And they should be, because it's iconic, and they want to make sure that it's cherished and taken care of properly. And so I knew from the start this might be some kind of might be something difficult. And if National Geographic and I could not sway CBS to really come on board, then the project would not, come to fruition. That was obvious. We knew from the beginning that we had to have CBS on board. But when they heard that National Geographic was part of it, and they heard about the idea of merging real life science with the fictional universe of Star Trek, they were enamored straight away. They loved the idea, and many of the insiders at CBS said that they were dreaming of having this kind of a book out for decades. They thought that this would, and the timing was perfect for the 50th anniversary. I think and with the new movie coming out as well, we have such a treasure trove of Star Trek photos and artwork that's now included in this book. Many of the artwork photos that are embedded now in this book have never been seen before. In any other form. So it's really amazing. I have to thank CBS, because they really opened up the vaults to us, and we were lucky, really fortunate, that they were completely on board with this project from the get-go.
You even got William Shatner to do a foreword.
I know, that really is the true dream. When I came up with this book, I said, I had to have Captain Kirk, William Shatner involved in it, and I feel so fortunate that he lent his name to it and put down a wonderful foreword. I think people will really enjoy reading what he has to say at the front of the book there. And yeah, it's something I'm looking forward to having him sign a copy of my personal copy, I tell you.
The book is called Star Trek, The Official Guide to Our Universe. Taking a look at the picture of the cover, just very quickly, how does it feel to see your name in Star Trek font?
It's kind of unbelievable. It's surreal. I mean, at this point, I'm still waiting for the book to come out. It's coming out on June 7th, so I have a few months to wait. But to see that cover, that beautiful cover that, you know, sort of brings together the Star Trek feel and the reality. People will see the cover and see what I mean, having both the real universe and the Star Trek universe together. It's just, it's a dream come true for me. It's been many years in the making.
Congratulations. Again, the book is Star Trek, The Official Guide to Our Universe. It's written by Andrew Fazekas. Andrew, thank you very much for being on the program once again.
My pleasure, and clear skies.
Andrew Fazekas, author of Star Trek, The Official Guide to Our Universe. You can check out his website at thenightskyguy.com, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com, go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0344, and you'll find links to Andrew's site, plus links to amazon.com or amazon.ca, where you can pre-order his book directly.
You're listening to The Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Drop Peter a line. He'd love to hear from you. You can email him at peter@thestufffile.com. Or catch up with him on Twitter or Facebook. There's more Stuff File coming your way in just a few moments.
Kelly Alexander's show is your place to be for everything to do with health, lifestyle, and entertainment. Join us as we chat with celebrities like Emmy winner Mia Michaels from So You Think You Can Dance, best-selling recording artist Taylor Dane, and world-renowned astronaut Julie Payette. We also cover important topics like breast cancer awareness and how to help your child through bullying. All this and more, please join us, www.kellyalexandershow.com.
It's The Kelly Alexander Show.
Capture your need for sound.
Peter Anthony Holder here. Have you ever noticed on some of those public broadcasting pledge drives, they tend to sound like ransom demands in a kidnapping?
Hey, your kids like this, Mr. Rogers. It would be most unfortune if, for some unforeseen reason, you weren't in the neighborhood no more.
Well, I'm here to ask for your support in a non-threatening, non-obligatory kind of way. Part of the success of The Stuff File depends on the generosity of its listeners worldwide. So if you can, and if you want, please feel free to make a small one-time donation. Just go to the website at thestufffile.com and click on the PayPal donation button. You can donate $10, $5, or even $1, whatever you'd like.
You know that big bird? That would be one huge drumstick. You know what I mean.
If you have a PayPal account, it's an easy transfer. And if you don't, all major credit cards are accepted. Your generosity would be much appreciated in keeping this show running.
About that antique roadshow, they might be seeing a little more concrete than they originally anticipated.
No strong-arm tactics, no ransom demands. Just a simple please and thank you. To donate, visit thestufffile.com.
Coming to you from Canada, the land of universal healthcare, colorful money, and the correct spelling of the word theater. This is The Stuff File with Peter Anthony Holder.
And still to come on the program, we'll talk with actor Spiro Malandrakis. Plus, we'll find out what a talent agent does. We'll speak to one from Los Angeles. And, of course, there is an idiot of the day coming your way a little later on, and much more Stuff File news right here, right now, on a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio. The smarter way to listen to radio. A driver in Roselle, Illinois, noticed something unusual about another car on the road and called police. Officers responded and pulled over 54-year-old Mary Ann Christie, who allegedly smelled of alcohol and failed field sobriety tests. She was cited for driving under the influence. Now, what was so unusual about the car? Well, stopped for driving with a large tree embedded in the front grille, the police report noted. The tree was an estimated 15 feet tall. We didn't stand there and measure it, but it was a big tree, said Deputy Chief Roman Tarcella. Christie told officers she had struck the tree somewhere near her home, about 4 miles away from where she was stopped. She lives in Schaumburg, on Spruce Court. Well, they might have to change her street's name from Spruce Court to Stump Court. And you know, I've seen pictures of this car with the tree embedded upright in the grill. It never ceases to amaze me how someone could be so drunk that they have no idea they've uprooted and embedded a mature tree into the front of their car. That's just baffling. Meanwhile, a homeowner in New Ipswich, New Hampshire, tried to thaw out frozen pipes with a blowtorch. You know where this is going. The resulting three-alarm fire destroyed the house. A hairdryer works fine, suggested Fire Chief David Leal. It takes a little bit longer, but at least you still have your house standing when you get your pipes thawed. Thank you, Captain Obvious. Well, that definitely is true, but you have to admit, this guy's pipes were definitely thawed quicker. Yeah. A 50-something woman sitting in the back of a New York City bus got upset when the driver told her to put out her cigarette. Now, she wouldn't get off the bus, so the driver stopped and called police. But while he was helping other riders to the street, authorities said, the smoker seized the wheel and started driving. She got three blocks up 3rd Avenue before another bus blocked her way and cops nabbed her. They took her to a hospital to be evaluated. In other words, a checkup from the neck up. Because it's not like she's the pro-smoking lobby's answer to Rosa Parks or anything. No. Meanwhile, an Ohio woman is headed to prison after pleading guilty to mixing crack cocaine with red Kool-Aid and shooting it up. 28-year-old Samantha Dyer was arrested around noon on Christmas Eve last year when police tracked her down on a warrant for a parole violation stemming from an earlier theft charge. In addition to locating Dyer, authorities found crack cocaine, syringes, and other drug paraphernalia in her possession. Dyer admitted mixing the crack with Kool-Aid and was charged with drug possession, which is a fifth-degree felony. Crawford County Municipal Court Judge Shane Luthold had some harsh words for Dyer when he set her bond at $500,000 shortly after Christmas. In August, you appeared in front of me, and based on your appearance, it was apparent to me that you had a drug problem, he told her at the time, adding that she had been advised last summer to enter a drug treatment program, which she did not do. You look 100 times worse now than you did last August. You look like a damn train wreck. I believe you tried to kill yourself unintentionally. You are not going to die on my watch, the judge said. Well, now a couple of weeks ago, it was Dyer's day before his brother, and by the brother I mean the judge's brother, Crawford County Common Pleas Court Judge Sean Luthold, who accepted her plea of guilty to the drug possession and sentenced her to 8 months in prison. When you get out, do you plan on coming back to Crawford County? He asked her. Dyer answered, yes. I've done everything I can to show that this is not the county to get into drugs. If you get back into drugs, you will likely get the same result, the judge said. You know, so many interesting points in this story. First of all, props to the parents of Shane and Sean Luthold. It's not too often that you have two judges in the family. And second, mixing Kool-Aid with crack? Who comes up with these kinds of ideas? I mean, you'd have to be on drugs to... Oh, never mind. And finally, in this section of Stuff File News, before we get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder, 53-year-old Andrew S. Gordon of Chelmsford, Massachusetts, wanted to hire a hitman to kill his wife. We've mentioned stories like this on the program before. As usual, the hitman was actually an undercover cop. They always are. In this case, a state trooper. Gordon was arrested. In an apparent attempt to get out of the resulting charges, Gordon offered a gang member $15,000 to kill the state trooper and another witness in the case against him. Of course, the gang member was also an undercover police officer, and Gordon was arrested again. He has been convicted in both cases. He has already been sentenced to 3 to 5 years in prison in the first case and faces up to 50 years in prison for the second case. Meanwhile, I'm sure his wife is now in the process of dying from an acute case of uncontrollable laughter. Anyway, let's get to our next guest here on the Stuff File program, shall we? Montreal-based actor Spiro Malandrakis is quite busy these days. He has a slew of film and TV roles in both Canada and the United States. He's on Discovery's new series, Real Detective. Plus, he has a recurring role in the hit Bravo police drama, 19-2, and more. so I'm thrilled he's taken some time out of his very busy schedule to talk to us here for a bit. He joins us via Skype from right here in Montreal. Hi, Spiro.
How you doing, Peter?
Just tickety-boo. Thanks once again for chatting with us. The last time we spoke, I'll tell you when it was, April 16th, 2007.
Oh, my word. That was a long time ago.
That was a long, long time ago. And your career was just kicking off, really, around that time. I remember seeing you back in the days of Dynamic Theater Factory so long ago. You've done quite well for yourself since then, to say the least.
Oh, man. Things have been rolling pretty well. I'll never forget our first interview because I remember that was my first Canadian interview I did. It was fantastic. My agent called me. She's like, this wonderful radio guy, he saw a commercial you're in and he found it pretty awesome and he wants you in the studio. I was like blown away. I'm like, what? This is amazing. But no, things have been going super well. I'm so grateful. And I get to live in Canada in my hometown, Montreal, which is even better. So yeah, I'm super happy.
Okay, you see, I wasn't going to bring up the commercial because I figured you wanted to put some distance between yourself and that commercial. But now that you've mentioned it, well, I'm going there. You did a commercial for Videotron, which, by the way, I watch all the time. It's up there on YouTube. It's never going away. You look back at that now, a decade later, what do you think when you see that?
Oh, man, you know what? It's so funny. A lot of people bring up the commercial, and especially sometimes in Montreal, when I hang out with my parents in the Greek community, a lot of people don't see my movies or the shows. People just remember that one commercial. But I'm so grateful for it because it was phenomenal. It was, you know, early on in my career, and it was a great campaign. I was doing commercials for them for like 2 years, which is such a blessing. But that commercial was a lot of fun because they gave me some creative control, and they just let me be me. And it's just great memories. And I'm still happy that it brings a smile to people's faces almost a decade ago.
Yeah. Now, I mentioned some of your credits off the top, some of the things you're working on. I mentioned 19-2. I mentioned Real Detective. I didn't mention Quantico. You've got a lot of balls that you're juggling in the air. How's it been going? I mean, obviously, you've been pretty busy.
Last year was a phenomenal year. It was such a blessing, especially being on all these wonderful shows. But really, Real Detective and 19-2 is something that just, you know, it's blown me into another level of just around so much talent. Real Detective working with Devon Sawa, a Canadian actor, Final Destination, Nikita. He lives in LA, but working with him on Real Detective was just incredible. And this other wonderful Canadian director, David Hackle, who's directing the series. So that was just a dream come true. But then you have 19-2, which I must mention, they just won the Screen Actors Awards for Best Drama of the Year and Best Casting. So you got a shout out to 19-2 for their great work. But that show is just a literally, I've been working my whole life to play a character like the character I'm playing in 19-2. And it's such a blessing to be surrounded by so much talented actors and a wonderful team.
Now, has your career taken a different turn as far as the type of roles that you're offered and the type of roles that you get? I mean, I recognize from, again, that commercial you had done, from meeting you when we talked so many years ago, that you're kind of a goofy guy.
But, oh, yeah. I'm the thing about me, yes, I'm so goofy. I'm so silly. I love comedy. Yet, a lot of the roles I'm doing are really dramatic, character-driven roles, really different from who I am. But that's how I grew up. I grew up doing mask work. I grew up doing a lot of character work. And that's actually what I'm best at. I'm best at really building a character from scratch and stepping in somebody else's shoes. And luckily now, after all these years of being an actor, I'm fortunate that those roles, those auditions, those chances are coming my way instead of being reserved for a very handful of actors in my city of Montreal. So now I'm eligible for these roles, and praise the Lord, I'm landing them and having a wonderful time.
I mentioned Quantico, which is that huge ABC hit, which has just been renewed for a second season in the United States. What's it like shooting a show literally in your own backyard that is such a major draw and an American hit?
On Quantico, I got a smaller role. It was a reoccurring role. Hopefully, he'll be coming back season two. But it is just phenomenal. I mean, I'm so grateful that I'm shooting an American show. And I wouldn't mind living in LA just for the sunshine. But I'm so happy to be doing it here in Montreal. I mean, I live a block away from my parents, my nephews, my sister. So it just makes everything much more relaxed. And it just gives me a little more confident, knowing like, wow, I'm doing this in my own neighborhood. It's so hard to explain how fun and how lucky I am.
Is your career progressing the way you would have liked it to? When you first envisioned yourself as an actor and you said, this is what I'd like to be doing, is it what you're doing right now? Or are there still some big lofty goals that you want to achieve?
I'm hard on myself. I always have massive goals. I'm always happy with what I'm doing, but I always want more. Yes, I'm happy where my career is today. I worked really hard to get onto a show like 192, onto a show like Real Detective. I finished a miniseries a couple years ago called Category 8, which is playing around the world. And I'm very fortunate, but I want to be shooting pilots. I want to be working in Los Angeles, California. I want to be shooting movies. I want to be working all the time because it's just the greatest experience being on set. And when a movie is done, even though we work 15, 16, 17-hour days, and I probably need a week to catch up on sleep, I cannot wait to go back to work. It's this weird feeling inside. You think, wow, you spend 2-3 months working on a movie, you'd want a break. But I guess it's because I've been striving so long in my life to get to this level that I just want to work.
Now, you went to Ottawa not recently, did you not, with some other actors?
Yes, we went there to Parliament with about two handfuls of actors from Canada to lobby the government to help the acting community so we don't lose our culture here in Canada. It was incredible. We were I was just there with wonderful actors from Saving Hope, some of Canada's finest actors fighting for our rights here in Canada.
And I know we talked a little bit about it off air just before, but it sometimes is a bit of difficulty with actors in this country. There's not necessarily the star system that the United States has, right?
Yeah, we don't have that star system. Like in the States, I have friends who audition for pilots and are up for pilots, but they don't even book the roles, yet their pay grade will even go up. Because they see that value, they see how far this person has gone in his career. Here in Canada, it's not the same thing. You know, I've come off of a big miniseries like Category 8, playing all over the world, and I got the ball rolling. And after the movie, after the miniseries, it's like the ball stops, and I have to, you know, you start from square one again. The good thing about that is it really builds character here in Canada, and you don't take anything for granted, which I don't. Every audition I go in, no matter how big my resume gets, it's like, I gotta give it my best. There's no room for error, you know?
You've done shows that are seen all over the world. You've done shows that are seen in Canada. Have you been recognized in odd places or in odd ways?
In Europe, it's out of control. I have a friend in Italy. And one of the miniseries Category 8, I just mentioned again, it's because really it's playing back-to-back in Italy and Spain and Portugal. So in the Philippines, I don't know, because it stars Matthew Modine, I don't know if they paid for the rights or he was too expensive, but I'm on the poster of the movie in the Philippines. I get wonderful emails, wonderful tweets all over the place. And here in Canada, of course, with Quantico and Real Detective, it's a blessing going somewhere and somebody remembers you from a show, or you put a smile on his face, or you really really makes his day.
Okay, so you'd like to get involved in pilot season, as you mentioned. If you had your goal, if you had your druthers, and you can pick the role and the show that you'd like to be on, would you prefer a drama or a comedy?
I love character work. I love drama, but I've been doing it for quite a while now. I think it would just be great to shoot a sitcom because it involves a lot of the elements that I grew up with. In a sitcom, it's on camera, yet you have a live audience. And the other wonderful thing is you rehearse Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, and you shoot Thursday. So it involves a little bit of everything. So I think it would be great one day if I'm fortunate enough to shoot on a sitcom. But I really, really, really love character work, character-driven roles, which really take me on a journey and makes me grow so much as a human being, realizing what other people have gone through, especially like this season 3 of 19-2, the role I play, Frank Fernie. It's incredible to see the struggles people go through in life and how they overcome them. It just blows me away and changes me from the inside out.
Well, fans of Spiro Malandrakis can look various places to find you, because lately you're everywhere. So all I can say is check your local listings. And it's an embarrassment of riches, right? Because you do all this work at a certain period of time, and then when it all comes out, you're still looking like, what am I doing next, right?
It's always like that. That's the artist's life. What am I doing next? And, you know, I'm very excited for this year. I have all these wonderful auditions and opportunities coming my way, and I cannot wait to see what sticks and what I start shooting on next.
Well, we can't wait to see what happens for you as well. Spiro, thank you very much for being on the program with us.
Thank you.
Actor Spiro Malandrakis. If you want to find out where he's appearing next on your television, as the saying goes, check your local listings. He's showing up on TVs everywhere these days. You're listening to the Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder.
I'm Bob Dorigo Jones, and this is Let's Be Fair. Imagine this scene that happened in Georgia. A woman is walking down the street while sending a text message on her cell phone. She approaches a ladder in her path that is clearly visible to everyone around, and even has bright orange warning cones around it. But because she's looking at her phone, she bumps her head on it. Of course, she sues. She must have missed the public service announcements pleading with Americans that when it comes to texting, quote, it can wait. When the case got to a jury, the jury had to decide how much responsibility the woman had for her own injury, since she wasn't watching where she was going. It wound up saying she was only 8% responsible and awarded her $175,000, seven times more than the cost of her medical expenses. Let's be fair, the woman's own lawyer said he had no idea where the 8% figure came from, and the award was even more than he asked the jury to give his client, all for walking into something that was in plain sight. Learn more. Visit our website at centerforamericatv.org.
This is the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder. Pay very close attention. There could be a test later.
And still to come, we'll talk about being a Hollywood talent agent. Plus, we do indeed have an idiot of the day coming your way. But I've got one more Stuff File news story to share with you here in a program also heard on Stitcher Smart Radio, the smarter way to listen to radio. A man broke into the ATM at a Bank of America in Phoenix on March the 1st, but was in police custody a few minutes later. He walked away from the machine cleanly, but happened to spot actor Bill Murray on the street. Murray was visiting friends in the city, and he could not resist stopping to chat with Murray about the movie Zombieland. The delay allowed witnesses to the robbery to catch the man and identify him for police. Classic proof that whatever your job is, even robber, you have to take it more seriously. There is no time for slacking off. On another note, do you think Bill Murray would get an arrest assist? I'm curious. You know, I could have made him the idiot of the day, but I did not. The idiot of the day comes a little later on. But first, let's get to our next guest, shall we? In the world of Hollywood, what exactly does a talent agent do? Well, they act as the middleman between the actors and the studios. To find out exactly what the job entails, we're joined by Erin J. Morgart, an agent to the stars. She joins us on the line right now from Los Angeles. Hi, Erin.
Hello. Very nice to be on your show. Thank you.
Thanks for being on the program with us. Now, I've had the opportunity, based on the fact that I've done a lot of interviews over the years as well, that I've dealt with PR people and I've dealt with managers and I've dealt with agents. And so I know a little bit about this, but the one thing that people seem to be confused about, we hear the term celebrity manager and we hear the term agent. Is there a difference between the two?
There most definitely is a drastic difference. In fact, I became an agent because I finished filming a docudrama in Los Angeles. It took about a year and a half, and I have never had an agent myself. I had a manager briefly, and I have an entertainment attorney and, of course, a publicist. And after filming that show, and then I'm going on to do more things, I noticed that a lot of my friends who already are celebrities, they are, you know, working for different studios. A lot of them were not able to present their show or pitch their show or do anything, even get into the door, unless they had an agent. The studios specifically stated that they had to have talent agent representation, meaning a licensed brokered, which it's very expensive to do, representative. And in California, you are looking at spending anywhere from $8,000 to $12,000 to just get bonded to be an agent, and then you have to go through all the paperwork to do that. That's step number one. And then from there, and that's if you're on your own, which I wanted to be on my own. I didn't want to be with another agency. I like doing my own thing. So that is essentially why I became an agent. And so there's a lot of legalese that you have to know. Managers can't do that. They can't go into Mark Burnett Studios and present or pitch a show and be able to do the contracts and all of that. A talent agent can do that. They are legally able to do that, of course. So there's a drastic difference. Managers are there are a lot of laws that are lax throughout the United States that entails anyone essentially to be a manager. Not to put some down, because there are some excellent managers out there. But for me, I wanted to go the extra mile and become an actual agent. So.
Now, I've heard a similar situation in the sports world, in that managers and agents, or agents in particular, what they do is they get to play the bad cop to their client's good cop, who then allows the good cop, so to speak, to focus purely on what it is they're doing, be it a sports celebrity who works on his or her craft as an athlete, or an actor who works on their craft as a performance. Is that partially true?
That is partially true, especially with sports agents. I know I have friends that work for ICM and also CAA, specifically in the sports division. And that's a very different realm compared to, say, movies, television, and that nature. It's much more competitive, especially when you're playing bad cop, good cop, because the athlete is, of course, not only they can be actually a little hesitant about stepping forth into asking for a certain amount of money, and that's where a really strong agent comes in, sometimes even as a parental figure if they're fairly young, which happens a lot, to come in and actually bring together the complete deal. So that's, I think it's imperative that, especially with sports figures, that they have that essential agent, because a lot of them are recruited right out of high school, which I personally, I think they should complete college, but a lot of them don't. They go on. They're not prepared. And so they need to have someone who can be there to do that. And actually, a lot of teams have life coaches, even, that will help, like, bridge that gap into transitioning into the professional world.
Besides being a very important and somewhat lucrative position to be an agent for someone who is very successful, being an agent can also be a stepping stone to being a studio head too, could it not?
Absolutely. And you pointed right at my goal. About 4 years ago, my goal was to this was even before I was filming the show. I said, I would like to be the next Sherry Lansing. I want to be a studio head, because I have that personality. I've worked with the military. I've trained the military. I have the education. My first degree is in psychology. I've been from point A to point Z with a show. I belong to several think tanks, and I think I have what it takes to do that. You have to have a thick skin, but you have to know a lot of the right people and have the legal capacity to be able to handle a lot of stress. So I'm glad you mentioned that, because I like to put things into a vision and then make them happen. So thank you.
you mentioned Sherry Lansing. She was and is quite the trailblazer.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Yeah, she absolutely was. Absolutely.
Now you've mentioned on several times. You've mentioned a couple of times now the docu drama. Can you tell us about that?
It is still under NDA, but it is being edited by one of the very, very major networks that happened to win. They have won several Academy Awards, so I'm not allowed to really say which one. But it's being edited, and also I am partnered up with Colorado Artist Management Group. It's also known as COAMG. We have now 8 projects in development. 2 of them are documentaries, and my partner is Devon Brown. We together have created a network. We're working with Roku, Netflix, HBO. He's a developer. He actually graduated from MIT. He's a programmer and mathematician, and then he went on to film school. So between he and I think that we'll do very well, because he also is an A&R with some very big labels. So.
Now,
I think we'll do okay.
Many agents either come from a marketing background or a business background, although there are still a lot of people that come from the School of Hard Knocks and from various other ways to become a manager. What was your route to becoming a manager or an agent?
Honestly, if you look at or believe in. And I'm not really into astrology or anything of that nature, but by nature, I'm a Capricorn. By nature, I'm very logical. I look at things from a business standpoint. When I was in graduate school, I took a personality profile test to make sure they make you do that when you're going to graduate school for psych. And I was an ENTJ, and that personality profile, especially for females, we are like in the 1%, and we are either hated because we just naturally take over things and manage. And not only that, but we like to have things in order. So that applies to everything that we do. It's just been a natural thing for me to do that. And I enjoy, especially the psychological component. Understanding people, I think, is the key to managing them and knowing what their needs are, but also you have to really have a strong business sense. And that's always been the case with me. It's always been something natural that's come to me. I went to school for psych and then later on got my counseling or my clinical psychology degree. And then I actually was going to go on into sports medicine because of the military. I worked for them for over 17 years until I started filming the show. I worked for them as a managerial training capacity person. That taught me a lot, because you literally had to read manuals on all of the regulations, things you could and could not do within the military. So that prepared me very much so for a very militaristic attitude. And but at the same time, you know, everyone is human, so I think that I would be a good fit, you know, as long as you make sure you have the right people around you. I have a great entertainment attorney, and, you know, you have to have those people around you to bounce ideas off of.
Erin, it's been a pleasure talking to you and learning a little bit about yourself and also the job of a celebrity agent and manager. I thank you for being on the program with us.
Well, thank you very much for having me. You have a wonderful day. Thank you.
Talent agent Erin Morgart. You can find out more info by going to her website, and you can go to my website at thestufffile.com. Go to the What's On page for this show, which is show number 0344, and you'll find the link. You're listening to The Stuff File program with me, Peter Anthony Holder. Time now for the Idiot of the Day.
And now it's time for the strange things adults do. The Stuff File presents the Idiot of the Day.
Stay state troopers missed hundreds of baggies filled with heroin during their first search of a car they stopped on Interstate 91 in Hatfield back in February. Massachusetts State Police arrested three New Hampshire residents, Jordan Johnson, Ethan Richards, both 26, and 24-year-old Carrie Tutsock, after searching Tutsock's car that was pulled over for traveling at 11 miles per hour above the speed limit. After spotting a crack pipe sitting on the front passenger's thigh, troopers searched the vehicle and found two additional crack pipes, several baggies of heroin and crack cocaine, and a digital scale with heroin residue on it. Hypodermic needles were also found on the car's floor. Tutsock told police that she and the two men had just bought heroin and they were heading home to New Hampshire. Now, while transporting the suspects from state police barracks in Northampton to the New Hampshire County Jail and House of Corrections, troopers allegedly heard Tutsock turn to Johnson and Richards and whisper, "I don't think they found all the stuff in the car." Shortly after, detectives returned to the car in question to conduct a second search. Police came across a sealed red Coca-Cola can containing 230 baggies of heroin labeled Alpha on the car's floor. Troopers also discovered three digital scales with white powder on them inside the trunk's spare tire compartment. Now, why? Oh, why? When you are read your rights and are told you have the right to remain silent, do you not use it? And instead whisper somewhat loudly about more drugs in your car? Well, one reason, and one reason only, you're an idiot!
Gee, I'm only a kid, but even I know you're an idiot.
And that's it for this edition of the Stuff File program number 0344. Hope you enjoyed it. The website is thestufffile.com, and once again, stuff is spelled S-T-U-P-H, where you'll find information and links on all of our guests by going to the weekly Stuff File page. Just look for the corresponding program number, and once again, that's 0344. Email me at peter@thestufffile.com. You can also find me on Facebook and Twitter as P.A. Holder, and don't forget to check out the Stuff File store, where you can purchase a plethora of Stuff File merchandise, from t-shirts to mugs to tote bags to mouse pads. Hope to see you back here for our next show on the air, online, or as a download. We're coming to you from everywhere, including CyberStationUSA.com, GDPR in Nashville, KDXRadio.com, AirChecker, Canada's number one radio source, PCJ Radio International and its partner stations, TrueTalkRadio.com, downloaded on iTunes and Stitcher, and over the air on World FM in New Zealand, MediaCorp in Singapore, and WSTJ in St. Johnsbury, Vermont. That's it. Bye-bye.
You've been listening to the Stuff File program with Peter Anthony Holder, a presentation of Flying Fish Communications. Today's broadcast could be heard directly in your home, car, or wireless device, or on your computer, so you can listen on an outpatient basis. For those of you hearing this show directly inside your head, please adjust your medication.